Thank you. Good morning. The open meeting of the Federal Election Commission for December the 16th, 2021 will come to order. We have some late submitted documents. Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning.
Good morning.
I move to suspend the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents in order that the Commission may consider the late submission of agenda document number 21-40-C.
Thank you. The Vice Chair has so moved. Any discussion of the motion? Hearing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 The motion passes 5-0. The motion, let me call it for the record. The motion passed to the Vice Chair, Commissioner Traynor, Commissioner Cooksey, Commissioner Weintraub, and myself. The next item on the agenda, the Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on the Republican Party of Minnesota was resolved offline. So the first item that we will consider today is Advisory Opinion Request 2021-11-DCCC, DSCC, submitted by Mark Elias, Jacqueline Lopez, Rachel Jacobs, Shanna Ruhlbach, and Elizabeth Poston. We are joined today by Ms. Jacobs, Ms. Lopez, and Ms. Poston, the Questors Council, who are available to respond to questions that commissioners may have. I want to say good morning. Good morning. I see two. There you go. I see all three. Good morning, ladies. We also have Kevin Paulson and Robert Knott from OGC here to discuss the matter. So I'll turn to counsel, Mr. Paulson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, commissioners. Before you are agenda documents 21-40-A, 21-40-B, and 21-40-C, which respond to a request from the DSCC and DCCC. The request asks whether text messages sent to the committee's supporters via short code text messaging programs are public communications under the Act and Commission regulations. Drafts A and C conclude that the text messages sent as part of these programs are public communications. Draft B reaches the opposite conclusion, finding that these text messages are not public communications. We did not receive any comments on the request. We received two comments on the drafts from the Requesters Council and 64 comments from the public. I'm happy to address any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Commissioner Cooksey?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the appearance by counsel for the party committees here, and I also really appreciated their very thorough written comments on the drafts, but I would like to know if they have any other presentation or comments they'd like to make on the three drafts.
I don't think so. I think the written comments are the gist of it. I think the last thing I would add that we talked about collectively is we want to stress that while we think this is a very unique situation, and I understand that we're reaching large numbers of people with these text messages, we think it's unique because we are building our own audience, right? So it's really not the general public that we're communicating with. But we want to stress to the commission, we don't think that this is like some enormous like loophole that then people are going to drive a truck through in the scope of what's a public communication, because it is incredibly unique. As a practitioner, I can't think of any other type of communication that fits within this interesting narrow lane where we really are recruiting our own audience. We wouldn't even think that it would apply to other forms of texting, like the kind of peer-to-peer texting people do where they can just blast text people without consent. So I want to stress that we're not asking the commission to create a huge loophole here. We are just saying, when you read the plain text of what a general public communication is, this type of communication really just doesn't fit within that scope, because again, we are creating our own audience.
Thank you. Any further questions? Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So suppose every person in the country opted in, and you were literally reaching every person in the country, would you still say that because they opted in, this was not general public political advertising?
Well, I don't, although the committees would love that reality, it's not ever going to happen, right? Because you have to either text the short code to opt in, or you have to give us your phone number in response to a clear disclaimer saying you're opting in to receive our messages. So there's just no way that would ever happen. The only reason the lists are as big as they are is because the committees are doing, they're nationwide committees, right? Campaigns would never have an opted-in list this large. It's really just a testament to the number of people across the country that support the committees, but it is anywhere near the size of the country and never will be.
Well, but you're not answering my question, because your position and the position of draft B, I guess it is that because people opt in, it can't be considered general public political advertising. And I don't know where this opt-in requirement would come from. It's not in the law.
It is. It's in the TCPA and it is in the CTIA regulation. So it's both the Federal Telephone Consumer Protection Act requires consent to blast text, as well as the CTIA regulations at the
Congress. Right, no, I meant in the FICA. When you're saying I know it's part of other laws that you have to get permission. And yet somehow I still get texts from people that I have no idea who they are.
I can help you with that after the meeting.
Well, I don't want to accept that offer because that might be deemed improper influence and I wouldn't want that. But thank you for the...
Text end back. They'll stop.
I know that. What I wonder is, how do they get my phone number that they are texting me? But that's
actually an important point, Commissioner, that differentiates the request from the kinds of text you're talking about. The short code texting list, we can't swap or sell our list. It's only our audience. So you will never be able to, the DCCC can't short code text the DSCC's list and vice versa. It is only your list. Even if a federal candidate has one campaign and then starts another campaign, they can't share that list between campaigns. So it's really narrow to your audience at the time. And I didn't mean to evade your question. I understand it. But I think the reason this is different is because that will never happen. So yes, in theory, in a dream world, we could get everyone in the country to do this, but we never will because, again, we're building our own audience. There's no way to mass build the list to encompass the entire country. Why it's not a public communication.
Okay, so suppose it's not the entire country, it's just every Democrat in the country.
Oh, what a dream. I'm not trying to be evasive. It's just that it'll never get there because we take so much effort. It's kind of the same thing as saying, what if every Democrat in the country followed the DSCC's Twitter? Great. I don't think that would make it a public communication. They still opted to do it. So I guess my answer to your question is no, but it's extraordinarily unlikely. I think of the same way as if you follow our Instagram, our Facebook, or our Twitter, you're opting to see our communications. It's never going to be the whole country because people have to seek it out and do it.
All right. So wait a minute. I want to make sure that, did you give me an answer in there and then quickly say, but it's never going to happen?
I mean, in theory, yes. If we got every single Democrat in the country to opt in to receive our communications, they're choosing to be our audience, but it would never occur because by nature of the communication.
So it's your position that if every Democrat in the country opted in, it still wouldn't be a general public political advocate.
If every Democrat in the country followed our Twitter account, would that turn it into a public communication? I don't think so. I don't think that it's the number of people that matter. I think it's the question is, are you actually paying to advertise to the general public? And here we are not, because we're building our own audience one person at a time. They are choosing to communicate just with us, receive just our content. It's not like a newspaper subscription where you subscribe to a newspaper to get the content of the newspaper, and then you get the advertisements because they're paying to access you, right? It's not the normal content. Here, it's only our content. You're subscribing and signing up to only receive our content and nobody else's. It's just fundamentally different than advertising.
All right, I hear your argument. I just don't find it persuasive. I think at a certain point, okay, you are reaching the general public, that you get to certain numbers and you're already at pretty high numbers. I think you are reaching the public. And as I said, nowhere in the FICA does it say.
But if my Twitter account reaches.
Really? You're going to interrupt me?
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. I apologize.
I'm trying to explain my position. I thought it might be helpful to you to know why I'm going to vote the way I am. But If you're not interested, that's we could just vote. That's fine.
No, I apologize. The Zoom format is new to me, and I apologize for interrupting.
Okay. I'll give you that one. Everybody struggles with Zoom, even 2 years in. My point is that I think at a certain point, you are reaching enough people that it really has to be considered public. And I think you've reached that point. And as you have described the text messaging program that you have, and you are still paying, you're paying per message. Nothing in the FECA says anything about opt-in as being part of our definition of, or as an exclusion from the definition of general public political advertising. And it seems to me that this is very analogous from a lot of other media that we have considered in the past. Your comment used the word outdated several times, but I think to the contrary, what I am trying to do is make sure that new technology does not obviate the statute and the regulations that are on the book. Congress intended for mass communications to that had political certain political content to be regulated in some sense, technology is changing the way people communicate, but I think we still have an obligation to try and give meaning to what's in the statute and what's in our regulations. So I won't belabor the point. I plan to support draft C. And that's really all I have to say.
Thank you, Commissioner Weintraub. Any other discussion? Commissioner
Cooksey. Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Lopez, could you comment on the piece of reasoning that I think is in draft, both draft A and draft C, that the per message fee structure is somehow relevant to determining whether this is a public communication and why that's wrong?
Sure. So I think you can't look at whether there is any fee associated with the communication and use that to determine whether or not it is a public communication. There are a lot of communications that the commission does not treat as public communications that involve fees to send. So emails to build a website, right? There are fees for all of that. What you need to look at is, are you paying a fee to access a general public audience built by somebody else? And here we are not. Yes, we're paying a fee. We outline it in the draft. There's fees we pay to the CTIA, there's fees we pay to the vendor and to the carriers. However, we pay those fees to compensate them for their time and the work they're doing to provide the services, but we are accessing our own audience. We are not paying to access someone else's audience. So it is very different here. And I think honestly, just go back to the plain text of the word general public political advertising. The 2006 E&J lays out that advertising connotates paying a fee. But it's general public advertising. So that fee has to be tied to advertising to the general public for that fee to make the communication general public advertising. And here the fee is only tied to us reaching our own audience, not a general public audience.
And the commission's regulations indicate that, you know, things like a party committee website are not public communications. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah, and I think this situation is very similar, and draft B notes this and explains it, I think, very well, that this is just like a party committee website where individuals are seeking out to receive our communications. They're affirmatively taking that step and thereby creating our own audience. And there are costs with creating a party committee website, which is expressly approved in the 2016 J.
Well, that's the point I was going to ask next, which is whether there are fees associated with hosting a website and other web services that go along with maintaining that website and leasing a URL and things like that. Is that right?
Correct. It's actually quite costly. I review these agreements all the time as a practitioner in this space. You generally pay a vendor who will build the website, create the software, do the hosting. You pay for the domain name. You pay for ongoing updates to the website. There are a lot of costs involved.
And I just want to—I know this is made clear in your request and your comments, but I just want to make it very clear for the purposes of the meeting: the recipients of the text messaging program, and they opt in to the party committees. Their contact information is maintained by the party committees, and none of their contact information or the recipient's information is provided by the telecommunications vendors. Is that right? The telecommunications vendors are merely providing the mechanism for contacting them, but they aren't providing a recipient list to the party committees.
Exactly. And I think that's a really important point. We have to tell the carriers, these are the individuals and their phone numbers that have are our audience. And now they send the text messages to them. At no point do the carriers provide us with names or contact information. So we are no way dependent on them for the list of people that we are communicating with.
And then my last question is, you know, as I said earlier, the regulations indicate that a party website is not a public communication. It's fair to say, I think, that determination doesn't depend on how many people visit the website.
Exactly.
If hundreds of millions of people visited the website, that doesn't make the website a public communication. Is that right?
Exactly. The core piece is that the audience is your audience that is seeking you out. Your popularity, if people happen to like your website, doesn't all of a sudden turn that into a public communication, which is the same with these programs. The fact that, you know, the committees have a large list is reflected only in the popularity of the program and the number of individuals that want to be part of the audience. But just like the number of viewers of a website or a Facebook page don't turn it into a public communication, I don't think it's fair or correct on the law to say that because we have a large number of subscribers, we now have turned into a public communication, because it is still fundamentally our own audience that is seeking out our text messages.
Thank you for that. You know, as the commissioner who requested draft B and who edited draft B, I'll be supporting draft B. And I appreciate most of all, again, the very, very thorough written comments from you as the requesters about the drafts. I find that extremely helpful. I think it's something that should be encouraged in other AO requests down the line. I really appreciated getting those thorough responses. So thank you very much.
Absolutely. We appreciate the commission's time.
Thank you. Commissioner Weintraub.
Okay, one more question. Thank you, Madam Chair. I think the analogy to the website is not really very good, because people actually have to go to the website and click on it. Whereas once they've opted in to your text messaging, you're sending it to them. They don't go anywhere. They don't do anything. It just shows up on their phone. There's an opt-in argument on practically every form of public communication. I mean, if I'm watching something on an old-fashioned television show, if anybody ever still does that, and the commercial comes on, I can mute it, I can switch the channel, I can walk out of the room and get a sandwich, and many people do. If I decide to sit there and listen to the commercial, in a sense, I am opting into listening to that television commercial, and yet it's still a general public political advertising. The reason that that draft C mentions faxes, although I admit that not a lot of people are using faxes anymore, is that it does strike me as the most analogous form of communication to your text messaging program. It uses the phone lines, there's a per message fee, and like your text messages, you can't send more than 500 faxes to anybody unless they've opted in. Like, you may not be able to send any faxes to people unless they've opted in. There is a similar opt-in requirement for faxes under other people's laws, under the communication laws, not under our laws, but there's a similar opt-in requirement in order to send people faxes as there is for the text messaging. So why does the opt-in requirement for faxes not take it out of the realm of general public political advertising when according to you, the opt-in requirement for text messaging does?
So I want to go back, if I can, first, Commissioner, to your first analogy, which is the individual who's watching the television program and they see the ad. This is fundamentally different from that, because the people opting in have opted into our communication, right? You're watching that TV program because you're watching the show. You are a subscriber, so to speak, of the TV channel and the show. The advertising, they're paying to access you because they don't otherwise have access to you, right? That's the whole point of advertising. That's not the case here at all. These individuals have expressly either texted our short code or gone on a website and given us their phone number to say, I want to receive your text messages, to receive only our content. So it's just fundamentally different. And that difference is exactly why I think it's not a general public communication. With respect to FAFSAs, I'm going to be honest. I don't know anything about the law that governs taxes. I started practicing law in 2014, so I don't know. So I can't tell you that I understand whether the same consent requirement applies to faxes. I could see an argument that if you're sending faxes to people and they have to opt in, that if I won't get into it. I'm going to leave to the commission one day to decide whether or not faxes are a general public communication or not. I don't have an opinion on it, to be honest, not completely understanding how mass faxing works.
Well, if I were to tell you, because I have looked this up, that just like text messaging, you have to get people's permission. They have to opt in to getting faxes. If I were to tell you that there was a law like that on the books, could that change your argument about how the opt-in feature takes text messaging out of the definition of general public political advertising?
If I have to go and collect people's consent to receive my faxes, then yeah, I think I'm creating my own audience at that point. I think it's unlikely because people don't really have faxes at their house, nor do we communicate over faxes anymore. So, but yes, in theory, if you have to go out and collect consent from individual people to get consent to fax them, sure. Whether or not the faxing fits within a different category of a general public communication, I don't know. I haven't considered the question beyond this exact moment. So it could be a public communication by means of another type of a public communication, but I think if you're creating your own audience, yes, you'd have a similar argument.
Well, the statute doesn't recognize that argument, not when it comes to faxes, and I would argue not when it comes to text messaging either. But thank you for that.
Thank you, Commissioner Weintraub. Let me poll colleagues. Thank you. So, are there any motions? Commissioner Cooksey put his hand down, so.
Madam Chair.
Go ahead, Commissioner Cooksey.
I guess I have one clarifying question, which is, I don't know if this is best directed at OGC, which is the procedure allowed for an absent colleague in an open meeting and whether Commissioner Walter will have the ability to submit any votes after the meeting, or if this is the only opportunity to submit votes.
Madam Chair.
Go ahead, Mr. Calvin. Go ahead, Mr. Calvin. I think you might be frozen. Well. Ms. Lopez, this is the world of Zoom.
Start out here.
Hello, Madam Chair.
Yes, we can hear you, Mr. Calvert.
Thank you. I froze for a moment. Yes, the provisions of Directive 10 Part H are the same for open or closed meetings. So Commissioner Walter would have the opportunity to request that he be recorded in this matter, should he do so before midnight Eastern time tonight.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Cooksey.
As a result of that, and not to get ahead of my colleagues or be too predictive, I think it makes most sense for Commissioner Weintraub to make her motion first.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Cooksey. That was good thinking on your part. With that, with respect to the advisory opinion request from the DSCC and the DCCC to 2021-11, I move approval of agenda document 21-40-C, otherwise known as draft C.
Thank you, Commissioner Weintraub. Any discussion on this motion? None. I'll call the question. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, please say no.
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 The motion fails with two voting in favor, Commissioner Weintraub and myself, and three voting against the motion, the Vice Chair, Commissioner Cooksey, and Commissioner Traynor. Commissioner Walter will be able to enter votes before the closing night of business today. Well, not business, by 12 o'clock. Commissioner Cooksey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Advisory opinion requests 2021-11 from DSCC and DCCC, I move approval of agenda document 21-40-B, which is draft B.
Thank you, Commissioner Cooksey. Discussion on the motion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, please say no.
No.
We will wait. The vote for Commissioner Walther would be determinative if he chooses to vote in approval. So this matter will be held over till that time that we can register his vote. Thank you very much to Council. Thank you very much to OGC. We're going to move on. I will note that the next item on the agenda is held over. So that is advisory opinion request 2021-13. It's held over to the next open meeting. So the next item that we will consider is audit division recommendation memorandum on the Connecticut Democratic State Central Committee. We have Scott Delsler and Susanna Patius from the audit division here to discuss the matter. And I see Ms. Ipa Alberico. So good morning, all. Please proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair and Commissioners. Before you is the Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum, ADRM, on the Connecticut Democratic State Central Committee, which was submitted to the Commission for consideration on November 24, 2021. The ADRM provides the audit staff's recommendation for four findings outlined in the draft final audit report. The four findings presented are: finding one, contributions from unregistered political organizations; finding two, record keeping for employees; finding three, reporting of debts and obligations; and finding four, reporting of apparent independent expenditures. We are available to answer any questions that you may have. Thanks.
Are there any questions? Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We've had some background communication, but I just wanted to confirm that I know that Council had said that certain communications were coordinated, and I want to confirm that those are not included in your recommendation, that his statement only applies to some and not all of the communications. We're sure about that.
Yes. Sorry for interrupting.
I don't answer. I asked a question, you answered. I appreciate it. And those have been excluded from the recommended finding.
That is correct.
So on recommendation four, what it comes down to is whether we think the affidavit is significantly different from previous affidavits that the commission has accepted as evidencing VME. Is that right?
That's what we're asking. Yes, that's correct.
Does council have a view on that?
We don't have a specific view on that, given that in the past, the commission has not necessarily been consistent on whether affidavits in this regard without additional information suffice to show the VME.
Yes, we have struggled with this issue for quite a long time. But I have to say that when I compared this affidavit to another affidavit that we accepted in a previous instance, as counsel pointed out to us, it's a little more vague. The last one included the names of the volunteers. This one doesn't, but we have somebody who swore under oath that he supervised volunteers, that they were there, that there were, I think he said 4 to 6 of them, and he listed what they did, and it was consistent with what we've, the kind of activities we've accepted for VME in the past. I kind of think, I I would not be able to approve recommendation four. That's just me, but I think it is close enough to what we have accepted before that it would be inappropriate to ding these guys. I would prefer to see more information, but I think this probably gets me over the line.
Any further questions? I must admit, today is moving quicker than I thought it was going to.
Madam Chair.
Commissioner Traynor.
I have a motion. If nobody has any other questions.
Thank you. Go ahead, Commissioner Traynor.
Okay. In the Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on the Connecticut Democratic State Central Committee, A19-19, I move that the Commission approve recommendation findings 1, 2, 3, and that recommendation finding 4 be moved to the additional issues section of the proposed final audit report.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question. Under the intricacies of Directive 70, I guess this is a question for counsel again. Am I correct that if the recommendation is affirmatively rejected by four or more commissioners, that it would be portrayed differently than if there's a split vote on it in the final report?
I believe that's correct, but I would actually ask either Lorenzo Holloway or Larry Calvert to weigh in.
Well, we would love the opportunity to see Mr. Holloway in particular one last time, I think.
Madam Chair, I have to apologize. I'm having some technical difficulties pulling up my Directive 70. So if Mr. Holloway can go, that would be very helpful.
Thank you, Mr. Calvert. Mr. Holloway.
Oh, well, actually, I thought you were going to answer, Larry. I don't have Directive 70 in front of me either. I would need to pull it up. But I believe this. Go ahead.
No, I didn't mean to put anybody on the spot. I think it is true. So my suggestion to Commissioner Traynor is that rather than just directing that it go to additional issues, that you might want to modify your motion to actually reject recommendation four, or to have a separate motion to reject recommendation four, because I believe that would get four votes.
I will accept that as a friendly amendment to my motion that we reject four instead of moving it to additional issues.
I think it still shows up in additional issues, but it is described differently.
Perfect. Then I will amend my motion to reject recommendation number four.
Thank you very much. We have Commissioner Traynor's motion with the amendment before the commission. Any further discussion? Then I'll call the question. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Motion passes 5-0. Commissioner Walter will enter a vote later this evening. So let me thank you very much to the Audit Division. We are now going to be rolling into a section that might my apologies. We're going to have to take a recess. We should be back on within 10 minutes at the latest. So my apologies to everyone. Madam Deputy Secretary, we need to pause the live video.
Madam Chair, we have resumed recording and the live feed, and you may regavel in the meeting when ready.
Thank you. We are resuming the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission for December 16th, 2021. The next item on the agenda is a very important item that I might have been eagerly waiting for. This is the last open meeting of 2021. The next item on the agenda is the election of officers for 2022. And I will provide some remarks afterwards. Forgive me, my computer is, let me resolve this. I'm having a little VPN issue, which let me do it right now so that we can make sure that we don't have any magical disconnect issues that could happen, as we all know. in the world of Zoom, as we just talked about. So it has been a pleasure to serve as chair this year. I will provide some remarks, but it is time to have a consideration of new officers. So we will start with the chair position. And let me ask, I'm trying to get out of this VPN, folks, and maybe it's a sign I should.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Vice Chair.
With apologies to Alexander Haig, I'm here in the building and I'm having similar problems with the network. So I suspect it may be a broader issue than just your VPN.
I think so, because I am attempting to disconnect, but it keeps reconnecting me to the system. It's like the Matrix that just doesn't want to let you go. So let's try to keep this moving along then. But are there any motions for the position of chair? I was thinking I might be frozen. Are you able to hear me? So.
I'll move for.
Commissioner Walter, would you like to be recognized?
I'd love to be recognized.
Go right ahead.
All right, thanks. I'd like to, I'm proud to say that I've had the pleasure of nominating Mr. Dickerson for the chair for another very busy, busy year. I look forward to serving with him. We had a nice long conversation about our situation, and we both agree that we're going to take all the time it takes to get our job done and with the utmost of collaboration and goodwill, despite the fact that we do have very major disagreements on occasion. They'll be undertaken with the best finesse that we can put together and come back with the best decisions that we can and lead in such a way that everybody will have the maximum ability to communicate on these issues. But so we have a nice little group of cases, a matter of ahead of us, but I can't tell you how much, I can't stop now that I have a moment, how pleased I am with the work that was done as chair this year. She's just a wonderful person. It was great to have her working with me when we started off together. And I've seen how she's taken this thing and moved us forward in a way that I don't think any of us have as in the past. And it's really, to her credit, that we've got so much done. I know we've broken some good records on the quality and number of cases that we've been able to put through. We're almost back to normality. So it's just, and she's done it with such grace, and it's very tough, and nobody knows how tough it is until you have all sorts of people moving at you and trying to get stuff done, and you have to make some hard decisions in a short period of time. Having said all that, I know that our new chair-to-be will be a great person to work with and to lead us, and I'm looking forward to it. And so for that reason, I hereby nominate Mr. Dickerson for the upcoming chair.
Thank you, Commissioner Walter. That is a wonderful motion. Is there any discussion on the motion? Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to echo Commissioner Walter's comments about your service. I knew that you would be able to hit the ground running, but you really have done an amazing job this year. We've gotten an unbelievable amount done. You took office at a time of great challenge for the commission when we had this huge backlog, and you handled all of us and managed all of us with intelligence, grace, courtesy, humor, determination, and incredible dedication to the mission of this agency. And I thank you for that. And I admire you for that. And I thank you for that. And let me also say that I'm looking forward to the upcoming year with the new leadership team. I have known Alan Dickerson not as well, perhaps, as some others, but I've known him for many years, and I admire the way he shows up to events, even when it's, you know, perhaps not the most friendly audience for his point of view. But he also is very dedicated. Oh my goodness, I lost him there for a second. I hope I'm not making you blush there, Mr. Vice Chair. I have admired the passion that he brings and the commitment that he brings to his interpretation of the law. He has been very dedicated and determined also. And like Commissioner Walther, I frequently disagree with the vice chair, but I know that he comes to this with honesty and intelligence and commitment to the Constitution. And I appreciate that. So I appreciate the last year, and I'm looking forward to next year.
Thank you, Commissioner Weintraub. I still want to open it to the colleagues to discuss the motion, but I would too like to join in all accolades to the vice chair. The two of us found ourselves thrown in this position, me having the benefit of being at the agency before, but the vice chair having the unique vantage of having practiced before the agency for years. It has been a genuine pleasure working with you over the course of this year. I think it's always an example of a good working relationship when you feel like you can learn something from the other person. I have learned something from you. I hope that you can feel that way towards me as well. There is a great appreciation for working with an individual that I believe all of us are, but I believe is truly dedicated to the mission of the agency. And as I've said before, I look forward to supporting your year as the chair, and I am ready I'm ready to take one of those seats that don't have a chair in front of the name and to follow your leadership. So thank you very much to the vice chair for his leadership this year, and I appreciate and support that motion. Let me ask colleagues if there are any more comments or discussion on the motion. If not, I will call the question. All those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Aye. I assume the vice chair, out of modesty, is abstaining on his vote. So
I abstain, but with gratitude.
The motion passes 5-0 with one abstention. So that moves us on to the next position that we have, and that is the election of vice chair.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'm sorry, because it wasn't unanimous, you have to call the vote.
Thank you very much. That's yes, one more thing that I'm going to be glad to not have to be reminded about. So the votes are 5 voting in favor of the motion passes, with the Commissioner Walther, Commissioner Traynor, Commissioner Cooksey, Commissioner Weintraub, and myself voting in favor and one abstention. Thank you, Ms. Allen. Appreciate you. So let's turn to the election of the vice chair. Any motion?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Go ahead, Vice Chair.
I'm going to try not to be too choked up to get this out. I have the privilege of nominating a fellow son of the American West to be the vice chair in the upcoming year. It's always a little bit awkward in that I suspect that there's no one observing our proceedings who is unfamiliar with Commissioner Walther's record. He first joined the commission in 2006, and this turn as vice chair will not be his first rodeo. Before entering into public service, Commissioner Walther was an accomplished litigator. It'll be a personal privilege to work with someone with much more experience in the courtroom than I have, but a similar view, perhaps, of the world. He was the founder and developer of a successful law firm in his home state of Nevada, and a leader of the practicing bar as president of the State Bar of Nevada, the Western State Bar Conference, and the National Conference of State Bar Examiners. And having chaired the 6,000 member fellows of the American Bar Association, I suspect that being vice chair of a mere 300-something employee agency is easy work. Most crucially, and I think in some ways most interestingly, like his grandfather and father before him, Commissioner Walther is a past president of president of the Reno Rodeo, which I have every intention of visiting at some point during my service on this commission. Accordingly, Madam Chair, I would move the selection of Commissioner Stephen T. Walter of Nevada to serve as vice chair of the commission effective the 1st of January, 2022.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Any discussion on the motion? Well, let me, I fully support this motion for the vice chair. Having worked with Commissioner Walter as a chair, as a vice chair, I am always eager to follow his leadership. He has been a guidepost for me during my tenure at the commission. And so I look forward to working with him in this endeavor as well. So unless there are any further comments, I will call the question. All those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
I assume that we also have modesty as well with an abstention by Commissioner Walter. So the motion passes with 5 voting in favor. That is Vice Chair, well, incoming chair, Dickerson and Commissioner Traynor, Commissioner Cooksey, Commissioner Weintraub, and myself voting in favor of the motion. So I say congratulations to our incoming chair and vice chair for the year 2022. So I don't know if it's appropriate, but I'm going to say here's a short round of applause for all of you. I look forward to not handing over this one because my name is on it, but handing over the proverbial to you. So we're going to move on. This is a little bit out of order, but it is the way that I put it on the agenda, so blame it on me. But it's the period of remarks and employee recognition. So let me just move into that. So everybody, forgive me for a minute. I had to pull up a couple of notes to make sure that I get all the names correct. So we have come to the last part of the commission's final public meeting of 2021. It has been an honor to serve as the chair this year, and I just wanted to say a few words about the accomplishment of our fine FEC staff. So first, it's been quite a year, hasn't it? Looking back at our first public meeting in January, I noted the challenges that we faced through the pandemic, the loss of a quorum for 15 months, an election cycle that's twice as expensive as before. We are still dealing with the aftermath of these events. And in fact, it seems that we've made some kind of adjustments having to work with these virtual commission meetings like this one, and they've become our new normal. It still feels strange to me that we interact this way over Zoom as opposed to being in the midst of each other over the course of the year, but we have managed to be able to do so with a successful level of effort. That being said, I think it is pretty amazing what our employees have helped us accomplish this year, mostly while working away from the building. And I'd like to take this time to just begin by thanking some of our longest serving employees. I always have to say this, let me apologize in advance if we miss some names, if I overlook some people, if I do not mention all the great work of all our teams, because if I were to do so, we would be here far longer than any of us would like to sit today. But for the part of employee recognition, I want to recognize time and service. I want to recognize those employees that have over 30 years of service with the agency. So I have a list, if you would like to at that time, to come on video for a second. No need for you to chat or anything, but if you want to come on video, I think you deserve to be recognized. For 30 years of federal service, we have Terry Marsh, Jeffrey Spilichetsky, Donna Mitchell, Jacqueline Gosipol, Sherry Haynes, Eileen Lemon, Cheryl Painter, Brenda Wheeler, Gregory Scott, Gregory Baker, Tracy Lagan, Eric Morrison, and Aaron Coles. So I'm going to make everybody do it, whether they want to or not. Let's just give a hand of applause for those 30 years. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I look forward to the day where we could actually do this in person again in the hearing room. So next, here are the employees with 35 years of service. Dorothy Yeager, Vernon Shorter, Gilbert Ford, Dominique Dillensanger, Sylvia Windham. And I saw Vernon earlier today. I want to make sure that the interpreter has announced Vernon's name so he'll be able to join us. There he is. Everybody, congratulations. We have two employees with 40 years of service. 40 years. Thank you, Vernon. Rhonda O'Neill and Michael Pearson. 40 is, I'm not sure if they, I know Rhonda. There's Rhonda. Thank you very much. Thank you. And here is the final whammy, folks. We have one employee with an amazing 45 years of federal service. 45. I see you, Commissioner Cooksey. I agree with you. I'm barely anywhere near that time period of in the years of my life, but they have been working a little bit longer than some of us have been here, I should say. But to that person, Carol Worthy, if you are able to log on to the screen, Carol is unfortunately off today, everyone, but let's just give a hand to that. 45 years of service is greatly appreciated. So thank you for logging on to the screen. My deepest congratulations goes out to you. We are fortunate, I mean, truly fortunate as an agency to have all of these wonderful people that have a commitment to service and have decided to make this their home, to make this a place where they have made a commitment to dedication to public service and have demonstrated that over the years. Now, we have employees that are leaving or who have left the building. I want to make sure that we have four current employees who are beginning a new phase in their lives, also known as retirement, something I hope to join them in one day. We will miss them and wish them the best on their endeavors. So I will ask these individuals to come on. There is Lorenzo Holloway, Jeff Spilachevsky, who we just recognized for 30 years of service. You may recognize him as one of our top auditors, Beth DeBow, and Tom Anderson. I would invite Ms. DeBow and Mr. Anderson. Let me make one special note. If you notice something unusual in the picture of Mr. Anderson and Ms. DeBow, yes, they are retiring together, husband and wife. I'm going to take another personal privilege. Tom Anderson is the chief of staff for my office. He is truly just a pinnacle of how things are done and should be done in this agency. But his wife is equally fantastic. When I joined the agency, this was my office mate. And I don't think I would know nearly as much as I know today if it was not for the ability to just take that information from Beth. So while I feel like it's unique for me is that my career started with one, it's not ending, but it's also been with both of you. So I can only say so much thank you to both of you. You're just actually wonderful and fantastic. And I'm going to do this because it's just me. I think we also have your dogs. They've become a part of the FEC world. So if they want to jump on the screen and say hello, go ahead and do it. We all know mine dogs. So you might as well, Simon and Lena. So I promised that I wasn't going to embarrass Mr. Anderson too much and everything, but I could not let this go without saying thank you to him. He's probably going to make me pay for it as soon as the screen goes off and everything. But thank you, Tom. Thank you so much. So I will stop embarrassing you. Mr. Holloway, we said this at the previous meeting. You know, it's wonderful to move on to the next stage of your career, but it is a true loss for the agency. We will now be quoting things as the Holloway plan from now on. We call it Levin and Policy. It's the Holloway way now. So thank you for everything that you have done for the agency and how you've taught us all so much. I'm sure that we'll keep the confidentiality of everything happening, but I'm sure we'll still be reaching out to you asking in the very generic and broadest terms possible to help continue to teach us and share your guidance and wisdom to all of us. I'm happy for all of you that are retiring. Congratulations and enjoy those next chapters. But let me move on. When we also talk about individuals that have left the agency, we had some individuals that unfortunately passed away during their times of employment. David Taylor, with the IT division. Mr. Taylor was the person that, like, I would just call all the time and would just help me figure out every little thing that I needed done, and just knew how to get in touch with everybody in the IT department to make things happen. So that was a loss for all of us. And Jeff Jordan, who was the head of CELA, which is a very traumatic loss for every one of us in the Office of General Counsel. So I also want to talk about accomplishments based on various divisions. So let's just break it down into a few divisions. We talk about IT. Let's extend a special thanks to the various divisions and the teams there, first known as simply as IT. You undertook several projects this year to protect our systems and data from numerous cybersecurity threats and kept our IT system operational and accessible during a longstanding evacuation order. And it goes without saying that the help desk, you are truly appreciated because you assist us on a daily basis, and you're doing this job in a remote capacity. So it seems that it's even more challenging than it has been before. The CFO office, thank you. It's small, but very effective. You worked with all the divisions on the annual financial statement audit, allowing the agency to receive a final audit report with no findings or significant deficiencies. Information, press, and the public records branch. Your work, as usual, is fantastic. I can assure you that I've spoken to many a different reporter over the course of this year, and they have personally complimented everybody in that press office. So congratulations to you. Greg Scott and your team, you were able to make the adjustments just seamlessly to take us over to virtual regional conferences. And I was lucky to be able to participate in two of those. I look forward to that opportunity to continue to work with your wonderful staff. You also had the ability to update one of the campaign guides this year, which was the first update that we released since 2014. So when you have set forth of a plan that we can hopefully accomplish this in the coming years to the years to come, because the public truly relies upon this information. The Office of the Commission Secretary. I doubt that it's obvious to members of the public who watch our open sessions online, but to the extent these meetings run seamlessly or smoothly, the credit goes to not only IT, but it goes to the Secretary's office. You made a smooth transition to Zoom. Even though we had only one public meeting in 2020, there was uncertainty how we were going to able to accomplish this with a full complement of commissioners, but Acting Commission Secretary Laura Sinram and her team rose to the occasion. You had to provide Zoom links. You have to make sure the right people are in the room, the right people are out the room, waiting rooms, all of this. And you do it with just grace and effort and always with a smile. That's a long way of saying that any of the success that I've had as a chair in running these meetings is primarily due to the efforts of Laura Sinram, Vicki Allen, Victoria Allen, Maureen Bennett, Zanab Smith, and Lisa Chapman and Venetia, the Furby Vines. These are individuals that record all of the votes that come in. So they've all had to pick up the pace with having over 15 months of a lack of quorum. And it goes without saying thank you to Jim Jones and Tiffany Carson Kennedy Smoot, who have played indispensable roles. I think everyone knows Tiffany is kind of like, I want to call her one of the most valuable players in the FEC. She's the first on everyone's list when we have any kind of tech problems. It's demonstrated today. The DEI Council, I want to highlight the work of the council that they've done over the past year. You were formed just over a year ago, and under the leadership of Isaac King, you've been working hard to develop a strategic plan to inform the council's work in diversity, equity, and inclusion over the coming years. And you also submitted a recommendation for the inclusion of the FEC strategic plan, which links the council's work directly to the agency's overall goals and objectives. And I'm pleased that that recommendation was adopted. I know you're all thinking it's going on, but there's just a lot that has to be said. And so I want to also highlight RAD, the Audit Division, ADR, and Athens Fines. I mentioned in January on the disclosure side that we've received and processed over 120 million pages of reports in 2020, which is a fourfold increase since the 2016 presidential year. Although this was not an election year, the 2021-2022 election cycle is shaping up to be the most expensive midterm cycle ever. And so far this year, RAD Division has reviewed a staggering 135 million pages of reports. In addition to the great work of our RAD team, thank you to Audit, ADR, Admin Fines. You continue to push the valuable efforts this year. As of the third quarter, you've reduced the backlog by over 95% at the beginning of the year. Audit completes 83% of the audits within 2 years of fieldwork, exceeding your performance goal, even while you lost three auditors to retirement who served the FEC for a combined 77 years. The commission closed 448 cases this year for admin fines, totaling $1.4 million in civil penalties, which I believe is a new record. Then we get to OGC. Everyone knows, you've all heard it already, that this is where I started with this agency. So let me, as I get near to closing this out, talk about them. The lack of a quorum meant that the commission was prevented from taking action on numerous recommendations. And by the time of our first meeting in January, many of these cases were imperiled by the statute of limitations. The caseload totaled 452 matters at the start of the year, which was an increase of 74% just from the time period after we lost the quorum in September of 2019. But I want to just say thank you to the staff of OGC, the Enforcement Division. Particularly, you had to endure hundreds of hours of meetings to discuss and debate and vote while the commission voted on these matters. You endured all the emails where we asked additional questions, where we asked for revisions, research that might not have been anticipated, but you stood up, you took it on with the challenge, and you've exceeded those expectations. We've closed well over 200 enforcement cases in OGC so far this year, which is the highest number for any similar period for at least the past dozen years. All of that does not even include those which we voted to investigate and conciliate with respondents. So I deeply appreciate the hard work of OGC. By any metrics, this has been an extremely successful year and your efforts are not unnoticed. There's a lot of other shout outs that should happen and occur, and I will do my best to reach out to you individually. But I cannot close without saying a special thank you to Commissioner Walther and Vice Chair incoming Walther and Commissioner Weintraub. I want to thank you both for, I think I could say mentorship, for welcoming in as your colleague, as your peer, at no time ever making me feel like I'm the new person on the totem pole, but respecting that the vision that I had and going along with it and fully supporting it. So I thank you both. There are so many hardworking FEC employees that I haven't mentioned, but please know that I appreciate what each of you do. I think I've been here long enough to get to know many of you, and I hopefully have gained an understanding and insight to what you do that contributes to the success of this agency. I say it all the time, and we often hear the term FEC family, given our small size and at times close working relationships. And I really do think it's a nice way to describe ourselves. Not seeing each other in person makes challenges to interact with each other, but I do hope to see many of you face-to-face sometime soon when it's safe to do so, of course. I wish the best of luck to our new chairman in 2022, Chair Dickerson. And thank you to my colleagues for your support. Thank you for your assistance. And finally, I hope everyone has a wonderful holiday and a happy new year. Thank you. I know that that was longer than you probably anticipated or hoped, but that was my last opportunity as the chair to be able to speak. So we all know me well enough that Shauna was going to take it. So unless there are any other comments or remarks.
Madam Chair.
Oh, yes, Vice Chair. Well, incoming chair, let's say.
It's still vice chair. The statute's very clear. It's for the calendar year.
Okay.
So sorry, you're not off the hook quite yet. I wanted to say a few things that as you said, needed to be said. I think that the chair's management and leadership style doesn't really need any comment from me. You just saw it. Very much a person who respects the individual and the hard work of the folks who work at this building. I think some of that is her long roots at the agency, but I think much more of it is innate and part of her personality and her character. So just as a personal matter, I want to thank Chair Broussard. Sorry, you're keeping the title for at least a couple weeks. For her leadership and for her kindness to me as a new commissioner. I've said this before publicly and I'll say it again. I mean, this has been a very challenging historical period. And I think we all recognize that. We have a once in a century pandemic. You have three new commissioners coming in as a slate in the midst of all of that. And I think that we were very lucky and the American people were well served by having Chair Broussard in the chair with her background and with her her abilities during this transitional period. And so I'm not going to echo everything she said. I'm not going to echo everything my colleagues said, but I do want to personally thank her for her service and for her kindness to me personally over the last year.
Thank you, Vice Chair. So it is now the time to turn to the staff director to ask the magical question. Mr. Staff Director, are there any management or administrative matters the commission needs to discuss today?
Madam Chair, there are no such matters.
Thank you. This meeting stands adjourned.